Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, as I just have. Let me hit the mixer a couple of times here. No. Doesn't seem to be. No, not so much. But anyway, well, maybe the microphone will get happy again here in a little bit. Anyway, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and participate in the real-time multimedia extravaganza, the madcap merriment that is the little discussion that takes place during the hours that the program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday, this being Friday, the 25th of March. I mentioned that, didn't I? It's a pretty good Friday. I mean, it's a little cold and a little gray outside, but it's kind of a tradition here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, that Easter is just a crummy day. It's almost always cold and miserable on Easter in Appalachistan. Maybe it's a sign. But good evening in the chat room. Good evening to those already jumping in. Good evening to Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Lady Tsuki and Little Gray and Soapbox Geezer and Tim from L.A. and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. And more will be along in short order, I have no doubt. Thank you very kindly, Randy and PA, letting me know live on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Thank you. It's a good thing to know. And here, let me... There, okay, that's a lot better. Sometimes you just got to slap the thing if you want the really good audio to come through. Mm-hmm. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, I was forgetting that part. Thank you. Thank you for the reminder. Little Gray beat you to it, Tim. You're slacking. Right. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast effort. And toward that end, I have good news. I have good news. In order to help us keep track of or keep pace with fundraising for the evening, there's a special offer on the table this evening, courtesy of our buddy John. John says, let's do a challenge. I'll send $100 to keep us digging out of the hole. If a matching $100 comes in tonight, I'll send another $100. I'd like to see us at least break even by the end of the month. As would we all, because that then will trigger the Beat the Swede All Year Long Challenge, which began at $50 in January, rose to $60 in February, and if we finish to the good in March, we'll go to $70, a $70 boost. And then if we finish to the good in April, $80, and you see how it climbs from there. But we have to meet each goal or else it reverts to the $50. So there's an incentive involved. And, you know, I like the fact that John says, I'd like to see us at least even by the end of the month. And that's the whole point. It's us. It's our community. And that's how we keep the bills paid. So, yeah, John kicked in $100, and if there's a match to it, you know, 5 at 20, 1 at 100, yada, 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 yada. And thanks so much to everybody who helped dig us out of that monumental hole last night. But if there is, if there's a match to that, then John kicks in another 100. And that's pretty huge. That is really, really huge. So, you know, the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com, and you just click on the tab that says contribute, and you fill out all the relevant information. If you want to make it a subscription, just click the make this a recurring kind of thing, and you'll be among the merry band of monthly supporters who were joined today. And thank you very kindly by Rico in Pittsburgh. Thank you, Rico. Thank you very, very kindly. You can leave those two boxes blank. Yeah, you can leave those two boxes blank about what you do. You know, about what you do for. You know, when you're working there with Homer Simpson at the nuke plant, you can leave those blank. Mm-hmm. What you do for Mr. Burns? At least you're not Smithers, you know. What a hell on earth that must be. Granted, he's animated, but still. Okay, so, I got to hit the thing again. Okay. Better? No? Okay, there we go. Seems like I'm having to hit it harder and harder. Mm-hmm. But, so that challenge is on the table, and hopefully it will be met. And thank you, one and all, in advance. If indeed that does happen. Of course, you can use the U.S. Postal Service if you like. I went over to and paid our mailbox rent today, and you know, just kind of checked out there to see which mailbox belonged to the Klan. And you know, lo and behold, if anybody ever wants to do that kind of an investigation. The Klan's mailbox, if you were to look there at 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, Beckley, West Virginia, the Klan's mailbox is actually in the front window. I mean, it's not around to the side. How cute. I wonder if this was intentional. The Klan's mailbox, which I believe is box 181, there at that UPS store, is in the upper right-hand corner of the little mailboxes there that you can, you know, see through the glass. So, I don't know, it might be interesting sometime just to sort of, stake the place out and just see if we can tell who the Klansman in question is. Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? But who's got that kind of time, right? Sure. There's still no word back from UPS, corporate headquarters on why they allow their agents to do business with known terrorist organizations. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, if you prefer to use the United States Postal Service for supporting the program, like for instance Strongman did last night, others do as well. Then you can just send checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not to Bob Kincaid. I never see him. Made payable to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And yeah, that's our box. The terrorist organization known as the Klan, they've got a different box. So I want to make that clear. But that's why we prefer checks and money orders, because, you know, the Klan are a bunch of damn thieves, and if for some reason something was to be misdirected to their box and it had cash in it, they'd keep it. Because, you know, they're a bunch of no-good goddamn reprobates who, you know, are a waste of oxygen on the planet. Yeah, in case you're wondering, I hate the Klan. I despise the Klan. I wouldn't piss on the Klan if they were on fire. Which, you know, maybe the next time they light a cross, they'll light themselves too. I'd have a hard time getting all worked up with a big sad for that. I don't think I could even muster a little sad. By the way, I had a note from Sparky. We may have a little bit of a late start this evening for Friday on the Front Porch. But if that's the case, then we'll deal with that as need be. But we may have a little bit of a late start. I'll let you know as I find out. Thank you for letting me know, Sparky. I appreciate it. Because, you know, on Fridays, we do the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Wait a minute. Better? Better. Okay. Maybe I just need a good hard-heeled shoe just to smack the board with. Oh, well, whatever. But Fridays, it's Friday on the Front Porch. And that means here in an hour or so, or thereabouts, or maybe a little bit later, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that makes for some of the finest conversation broadcast anywhere every Friday evening. Granted, you know, West Virginia Public Radio has Front Porch Friday. Well, we've still got Friday on the Front Porch, and we've been doing it longer than them. Just saying. Okay, where to begin this evening? Matching question coming from Jack in Shreveport. I'm kind of embarrassed. I'm not certain of this already, but do challenges work only for a single matching contribution, or can a few contributions add up to the challenge amount or go over? Yes. My goodness gracious, I'm so helpful. If there's $100 in challenges on the table, then $20 becomes part of it, another $5 becomes part of it, $5 becomes $10, $20 becomes $40. See how it works? Up to the stated amount. I hope that clears things up. Let's see. No, I was asking where to start. Just a minute here. No, that's not it. And by the way, I'm sure you've seen by now the nasty business that the National Enquirer has published a story, and well, we live in an era where the National Enquirer can be journalism, not because the National Enquirer's standards rose, but because the for-profit media have done such a magnificent job of lowering theirs. Okay, there we go. Lady Suki, in answering Jack's question, yes, it is cumulative, and you don't have to match the challenge exactly as one person. Precisely, yes. Are we clear? I hope. But thanks for asking, Jack, because if that was not clear to you, it means it was not clear to other people. That's the way large group dynamics work. We haven't. It's been a while since beady-eyed enemy of all that is good and decent in common humanity, Wayne LaPierre of the National Republican Rifle Association, poked his head out of his spider hole and had anything to say in public. But you know, it's like I don't know. It's like baiting an open field with corn and salt when you're in deer season. You can do that in West Virginia, by the way. You can hunt over a baited field. I never did it. I thought it was unsporting. Kind of fun, though. You put one of those big old salt lick blocks out in the yard, and the deer will come, and, you know, the rain falls on it, and blah, blah, blah. And as long as the block is there, they'll just lick that block. But once the block is long gone, they will continue to lick a hole into the ground. They really will. What's that got to do with Wayne LaPierre? Not a damn thing. Except for the fact that I wish he was in a hole in the ground. But no, Wayne LaPierre, beady-eyed, creepy enemy that of all that is good and decent in humanity, could not resist the lure of an invitation to come and speak at Liberty University, otherwise known as Jerry Falwell U, otherwise known as the house that Reverend Moon helped build. You know that, of course, Reverend Jerry wasn't having a hard time keeping the thing on the afloat, his law school in particular, and that's when Reverend Moon stepped in to provide the necessary funds to keep it all going. So they have these convocations. Bernie even spoke at one. They have these convocations at Liberty University, and Wayne LaPierre went to deliver an address. Yeah. And so we've got the audio for it. Really, that's not code. That's just random me banging on the board to make the microphone work. But Wayne LaPierre delivered an address on just how awesome the blood-soaked, bloodthirsty National Rifle Association is. And I just thought we'd check in. Shall we? Do let's.
It's got to the point in this country where one of America's greatest vulnerabilities is the failure of the media to provide a level playing field for the truth. And it's up to all of us to hold their feet to the fire. It's up to all of you to call them out for their lies. And when you see them doing it, stand up to them. Get right in their face. Do something about it, because it can make a difference.
What lies would those be, Wayne? Is it a lie when we talk about the fact that 21 little school children were chopped into chutney because your organization exercises such a hellish sway over the Congress, has such a death grip around the throats of so many members of government that we can't even have reasonable regulations to keep the Adam Lanzas of the world from getting hold of Mother Lanza's article or arsenal and going out and, you know, using a semi-automatic rifle to chop 21 school children into chutney. Are those the lies that you're talking about there, Wayne? Are you one of those Sandy Hook truthers, Wayne? Are you, huh? Are you?
So many of those elites, they think they're better than us. They somehow think they're more sophisticated. They think they're more intellectually evolved somehow than we are.
No, because intellect isn't so much a matter of evolution on a level playing field. One does not have to be more evolved to be more intelligent than Wayne LaPierre. One simply has to have studied. And, well, as we say here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, if Wayne LaPierre's brains was gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around to BB. Because that's true. Because Wayne LaPierre, I think there's something mentally wrong with you if you think that firearms are more important than children's lives. I just do. If you think that we can't have a regulation in this country that keeps firearms out of the hands of people who are dangerously mentally ill, or if you think that, if you think, for instance, and no offense to our visually challenged members of the Horn Family Commune congregation, most of whom have at one time or another agreed with me on this point. I recall specifically that our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs did. If you think that people who are blind should be able to carry firearms, yeah, that's not an evolution problem. That's a stupid problem. And whatever your genetic material is, you can evolve all you want. You can just evolve all over the place. Generation after generation of little LaPierres, and nobody's going to get any the smarter, because stupid runs clean to the bone. Stupid runs all the way down to the last little amino acid in your chain. Yes, it does.
Or they think they're just somehow plain smarter than we are.
Well, yeah.
Well, I've got news for the elites who look down their noses at all of us and our rights.
Uh-huh.
We gun owners are a heck of a lot smarter than you'll ever be.
Okay. That's the part I wanted to get to. We gun owners are a heck of a lot smarter than you'll ever be. Yes. Dateline, Georgia. Athens area, particularly the little community there of Monroe, Georgia. I'm pretty sure it's not Monroe. It's probably pronounced Monroe. It's rural area there in the Monroe area. And there in the Monroe area lives a feller by the name of David Thomas Presley. And Presley's got around, I'm sure. Is he any relation to the king? I don't know. I mean, the king was known. J.D. Sumner, go and get me the gun and a peanut butter and banana sandwich. I feel the need to shoot the TV again. Mm-hmm. Like it were a watch. Yeah, my Elvis needs work. But so there was gunplay at Graceland, of which Wayne LaPierre no doubt would have approved at the time, but well, he was just a little bitty fascist at the time. But anyway, Monroe, Georgia. And David Thomas Presley. Now, sometimes when you're relaxing in the Deep South, a little gun play is just what the doctor ordered. Well, probably not the doctor, but and often it's a little patriotic shooting, target shooting and such. It's often accompanied by, "Hey, y'all, watch this. Come on back. There we go. Come on back. Hey, y'all, watch this." Which no doubt was probably said there at the Presley home in Monroe, Georgia, this past Sunday. There are a number of things that converge in this story. First of all, I was blissfully unaware of a substance called tannerite. Now, I'm not unaware, and I am none the happier for having been enlightened. This is one of those things us elites aren't so smart about, like Wayne LaPierre is. We don't know about the tannerite. Lord God, Billy Bob, though, I'll bet there's all kinds of upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammo-sexuals knows everything there is to know about your tannerite. Come on back. There we go. Really? One of these days, I'm just going to knock the damn thing loose, I'm afraid. Oh, I hate sounding all muddy. Come on. Let's go. Get them up. Get them up. Yeah, maybe it'll come back. Who knows? But there's this stuff called tannerite out there, and tannerite is a mixture of ammonium nitrate, you know, the same stuff Timothy McVeigh used to blow up the Murrah Federal Building, and the same stuff that they use by the millions of pounds per day in central Appalachia to blow up mountains and, you know, poison the people who live near them. But tannerite in particular is a mixture of ammonium nitrate and aluminum powder. Now, when you buy it, the two powders are separate. But then you mix them and you shake it. You shake them real good, shaken, not stirred. And it produces a pretty impressive explosive. Fire Battalion Chief Craig League told the Loganville local news that tannerite's become extremely popular in recent years. It has become quite common for us to run calls involving tannerite. And one of those calls went out this past Sunday when one of those one of those arms bearing Second Amendment patriots. Decided to, in the company of a bunch of buddies. Yeah, hand me another one, Bud Lights. Yeah. Well, what he did is he packed him a lawnmower full of Tannerite. It just packed it chock full. And remember, it is a high-powered explosive, which you can buy right down to your sport and outdoor sports and goods store. It's sold in outdoor stores, according to Battalion Chief Craig League, around the area. And I would imagine probably not just around the area, but around, probably all over the South. And isn't that inspiring to know that you can buy a high-powered explosive at your outdoor sporting stores? So there they were, David Thomas Presley and his buddies, and they got them some Tannerite, and they mixed the aluminum powder and the ammonium nitrate, and they shook it up real good. It was shooken real good. And they put it into a lawnmower. Still haven't sorted that part out yet. And then David Thomas Presley, thank you, shot the lawnmower. Because things can get real damn dull there in Monroe, Georgia. But he did. He shot a lawnmower. I don't know that it was point blank. I credit David Thomas Presley with having at least that minimal degree of sense. But reading this story, I can't help but wonder if maybe there's a picture of Wile E. Coyote on the Tannerite box. Because, I mean, this is right up there with Instant Hole and Acme Rocket Skates and Acme Earthquake Pills. And yeah, I mean, if that magical, wonderful, gone but not forgotten team that produced all those wonderful Warner Brothers Roadrunner cartoons, if they were still a going concern today, you can bet your last dollar that there would be a Roadrunner and Coyote cartoon featuring Tannerite. Because I'm not kidding. David Thomas Presley stuffed 3 pounds of Tannerite into the lawnmower and then shot the lawnmower. Because in America, the greatest country in the world on earth, in the universe, today, forever, under God. In God we trust, amen. Boom. It is perfectly legal, because back when they were drafting the Constitution and those bold civil rights advocates were insisting that there be a Second Amendment to protect the right to keep and bear arms. Well, they didn't have lawnmowers back then. But they knew, because of their infinite wisdom, that someday there would be people who wanted to blow up lawnmowers. And therefore, we got the Second Amendment. I mean, goddamn, no kidding. Go on YouTube. You can find dumbass redneck shooting propane tank. There's probably thousands of those. Watch this here. And proceeds to shoot a propane tank full of propane. Now, when the propane in the propane tank explodes, the propane tank does not miraculously disappear. Neither, as it turns out, did the lawnmower. Because a big old hunk of lawnmower flew at considerable velocity. In fact, I think physics can probably even describe that velocity and maybe even calculate what it was. And perhaps even the rate of acceleration of it. Because a hunk of that, and one presumes that it was a sharp hunk, a hunk of that lawnmower flew right off of it and right at David Thomas Presley. And you know what? I'd imagine that you probably would have been hard-pressed to measure the time interval between the squeezing of the trigger of the Freedom Protector and the moment at which the hunk of lawnmower, the very sharp hunk of lawnmower, flew back at David Thomas Presley and lopped his leg plumb off. No, really. Cut off his leg. Now, obviously, it was an emergency, so his buddies picked him up and put him in the car and started taking him to the hospital. And they got as far as a nearby driveway when they happened to run into an ambulance. Mercifully, they didn't actually run into the ambulance. So they got him to the ambulance, and the ambulance then got him to where they could airlift him with a helicopter to an Atlanta hospital. As of the publication of this story, his condition was unknown. Because freedom.
Wolverines!
America. By God. They're ready for the ISIS there in Monroe, Georgia. You just let ISIS come to Monroe, Georgia, and watch them lawnmowers start exploding. ISIS, look, you know what? If I was ISIS, I wouldn't go to Monroe, Georgia. Because all you got to do is read the news from here, and you know, old ISIS Ahmed, whatever. God damn. They blow their own legs off. Let us not fuck with them. Praise be unto Allah. What was that? What was that, Wayne LaPierre? What was that again?
The elites who look down their noses at all of us and our rights. We gun owners are a heck of a lot smarter than you'll ever be.
I guess so. Because us, you, me, we, us, we're not smart enough to figure out how to buy 3 pounds of Tannerite, pack it into a lawnmower, and then shoot the lawnmower and let a hunk of lawnmower cut our leg off. That's them smart gun owners. Well, just for the fun of it, let's see what else Brother Wayne had to say.
In all of history, there's never been a group of citizens so engaged, so determined, so resolute, and so unified in defending freedom, so politically savvy and individually prepared and responsible for protecting our families and our communities.
By filling a lawnmower with 3 pounds of Tannerite and shooting it and causing a big hunk of lawnmower to come off and cut that gun owner's leg right off. Do you suppose, just asking, do you suppose The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms knows about Tannerite. Because I got a question. Why is that shit legal? And again, you know, this isn't sold down at the farm and feed. This isn't sold over there at your industrial chemical supply house where you go to get your welding materials and whatnot. This is sold at your outdoor hunting stores. What do you do with this stuff? I mean, do you work it after you've shooken it real good? Do you work it into some Play-Doh and make little Play-Doh rabbits and Play-Doh gopher? Was it Tannerite that blew up Bushwood Country Club? There is no gambling at Bushwood. Was it Tannerite? No, it was C4, wasn't it? Could you make yourself some sort of homemade C4 with some Play-Doh and some Tannerite? Or do you need a lawnmower? From your outdoor sporting activity standpoint, is Tannerite good for going grenade fishing? Now, you can't buy more than 3 or 4 boxes of Sudafed over the counter down to the cut-rate drugstore, but you can apparently buy Tannerite by multiple pounds. 3 in this case. Is anybody concerned about this? Or am I just being a ninny? Because, see, I'm thinking of people like, wait a minute, I can't stand this. I'm thinking about, almost, nearly. Come on. Come on, Gertie. There, yeah, I had to hit it harder. Sometimes you got to use a fist. Am I the only one worried about this? Because there are more right-wing domestic terrorism organizations in this country than there have ever been in our nation's history. Some of them's upset about our Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House. Other ones are upset about the precious little fetuses. And others are all worried about the Mexicans and the ISIS and the Ebola. And they can just go buy them some Tannerite out of which you can make a bomb out of a lawnmower. Which leads one to think one could probably make a bomb out of other things, too. Not that I'm trying to give anybody any ideas, I'm not. But, you know, your gun owners are so much smarter than the rest of us. The same way Wile E. Coyote was so much smarter than the Roadrunner and Bugs. Permit me to introduce myself, Wile E. Coyote, super genius. Hey, y'all, watch this. So. I don't know, we can ponder that. with some serious pondering. Subject line, gun smarty pants. Jack in Shreveport says, well, I'm not a gun owner, but I've lived to be pretty old and managed not to shoot my dick off. I know some of Wayne's gun owners have. Does Wayne still think they got the drop on me smart-wise or what? Yeah, and you know what? I wouldn't... If any gun toters come wanting to mow your lawn, Jack, I tell them you're letting it revert to nature or something, because you never know when they've got the damn thing packed full of Tannerite. And by the way, you know, I checked out the story. I wanted to make sure that it wasn't, you know, the Daily Current or The Onion or anything. No, that's real. True tales from the Deep South. And you just know there's somewhere, somebody's got something around here. Now, the fire chief did say this was the first such accident that they'd ever heard of, but they'd been on lots of Tannerite calls. Tim from L.A. under the subject line, California hates freedom. Tim says, I didn't know what Tannerite was, so I Googled and decided to put California. Oh, dear. On Sunday, August 18th, 2013, around 11 a.m., firefighters from CAL FIRE heard explosions very close to them as they were extinguishing a small brush fire in a remote area near El Toro Road, Lake Elsinore. The firefighter... Shouldn't that be like Hamlet Way, Lake Elsinore? Oh, never mind. The firefighters contacted several people who were shooting exploding targets and subsequently notified the Riverside Sheriff's Department. The hazardous device team responded and conducted an investigation due to the presence of illegal explosives. One person was found to be in possession of several exploding targets. These items typically consist of at least two parts, and they become a sensitive and dangerous explosive when mixed. Exploding targets are illegal to possess in California before they are mixed, as well as after the components are mixed together. Jeremy Ingram, 38 years old, of Menifee, California, was arrested and booked into Southwest Detention Center for possession of bomb-making components and possession of a destructive device. Both charges are felonies. Tim notes, apparently California hates freedom.
Wolverines!
Yeah. Well, Georgia does not hate freedom. Exploding targets. Yeah, I can remember when your average gun nut used to just take a lot of joy in putting one of those silhouettes up of a human being and pumping a few rounds into it and cackling gleefully when they landed in a bodily organ area, or, you know, right between the bad guy's eyes. Did I mention that all the silhouettes were always black? Well, of course. It was never a black background with a white silhouette. It was always a black silhouette. Right. I mean, I can remember when, back in the day when I carried a weapon, and there was reason to do so, and I received training to do so, I can remember taking Agnes to the range, and she had a 5-shot 357 Magnum revolver, stainless steel body, rubber grip, Ruger, for personal protection. And we set the silhouette up, and I swear she was aiming at the silhouette's head. But she put 5 rounds right into the crotch of that thing. And I determined then and there never to piss her off. She swore she was aiming for the head. I think one wag looked at her and said, well, I think you got it. Just the other one. And the shoulders, if you will. But the targets didn't explode. Why do the targets need to explode? Because gun shooting has just gotten so gall dang boring. Don't know. Bang, boom. I'm at a loss. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Here's a great idea. Hey, Bob. Hey, Ron. The Republicans have started a petition among its rank and file to allow guns in the Quicken Arena in Cleveland. Really? Is it the Quicken Arena? So they can have the Quicken and the Dead? Oh, you saw what I did there, right? The Republicans have started a petition among its rank and file to allow guns in the Quicken Arena in Cleveland for the Republican convention. I'd like to yell fire in that crowded theater. Clear! Fire! Bang! That's the thing. They wouldn't run for the exits. They'd start looking for somebody to shoot. Where's the black guy? We got some black guys in the Republican. I know they're in here somewhere because we always have to have a couple just so that the networks can show the black Republican. No. Besides Herb Cain and Mumbling Ben. Ron says, "P.S. Was that a hunka hunka burning lawnmower? Thank you very much." Mr. Presley has left the building. I'm just proud of you, Ron. I'm just proud of you. Hunka hunka burning lawnmower. Oh, that's toaster worthy. No. That was the wrong phone. We let that call go by, Brother Asa. Mike may be hurt a little bit, but it does pick up surprisingly well. But I'm pretty sure I didn't need to take a subscription to the Beckley Register, Herald, and Birdcage Wrap. Hey, little raw milk update. From, you know, West Virginia. Because freedom. The Bureau for Public Health, the West Virginia Bureau for Public Health, has investigated the case of right-wing Repiglick and Delegate Scott Cadle, who brought raw milk to the legislature to celebrate the outbreak of freedom that resulted in the passage of the raw milk bill. You remember the story, and once again, classic case of nothing in the making it to the national media out of West Virginia, unless it's hilarious, deadly, or embarrassing, or a combination of all three. God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Scott Cadle passed out raw milk to members of the House, and some of the teabaggers eagerly drank it. and became real sick. And the Bureau for Public Health said what Mike Cadle did by distributing raw milk to the public, even if they were members of the legislature, was indeed against the law. Selling and distributing raw milk in this state remains a prohibited act, and it's still punishable by a $50 to $500 fine. But the Bureau of Public Health announced that Delegate Scott Cadle will not be charged for the violation of that state law because the Bureau of Public Health noted it was his first offense. So apparently, in West Virginia, you get a mulligan on poisoning people with raw milk. Or at least you do if you're a member of the House of Delegates who controls the budget of the Bureau of, you know, Public Health.
Moverines!
No word yet on whether Delegate Cadle has promised not to poison anyone else. Can't make this stuff up. You have no idea how desperately I wish I was making this stuff up. No, really. I really, really wish that was just some silly thing that wasn't true. But it is. It is. It is all too true. And speaking of West Virginia's Bureau of Public Health, there's another story out there. And I don't know, I think, well said, Lady Tsuki. And if he does poison people in the Senate again, he'll make sure it sticks this time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and welcome into the chat room. Welcome, Dogman and Jules, Laborman, and our buddy Roger in Humboldt, Truth Seeker. Diane, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, under the subject line raw milk, says, I am in favor of giving more of it to your state legislators. I want them to have all they can stomach, and some that they can't. I agree. Yes, Tim, I said my name. And I also said that you were falling down on the job, too. Because Little Gray had to remind me to do it this evening. We'll have to have a personnel file review, Tim. It's an okay Friday here in the hills and hollers of West, almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. Not great. Not awesome. Not really good. It was kind of gray and overcast, and like I said, you know, sort of low 40s cold here. But it's Easter this Sunday. And I really do think the holiday should be properly commemorated. So with that, we will go to the Prophet Bill Hicks. Peace be upon him. The story of Easter. This is Conversation Radio. Radio unlike any other. Thank you very kindly for your kind words earlier today, Rico in Pittsburgh, who described our conversational style as breezy. And that just made me smile. Breezy. Because I don't think Rico was trying to be gentle and say full of hot air in a nice way. It just means that we don't have that, this is the news that you must know. No. It's a neighborly conversation. meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh, hey, Bob, could you please have that old boy, Mike Cadle, send a tanker of that shit to the North Carolina legislature? They need a good cleanse. Yeah, I'd say they look good in green. So we'll take our top of the hour break. We may be a little bit late getting started on Friday on the front porch, but I have a feeling we'll be able to. We got material to work with. I'll wait till I hear back from Sparky on that subject. So yeah, the Prophet Bill Hicks, the story of Easter. Peace be upon him. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I was over in Australia during Easter, which was interesting. Interesting to note, they celebrate Easter the same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. Now, I wonder why we're fucked up as a race. Anybody got any clues out there? Or where do you get this shit from, you know? Why those two things, you know? Why not goldfish left Lincoln Logs in your sock drawer, you know? And as long as we're making shit up, go hog wild, you know? At least a goldfish with a Lincoln Log on its back going across your floor to your sock drawer has a miraculous connotation to it. Mummy, I woke up today and there was a Lincoln Log in my sock drawer. That's the story of Jesus. Who comes up with this shit? I've read the Bible. I can't find the word bunny or chocolate anywhere in that fucking book.
Sleep, hairs will kick and leap, flowers climb in.
I really, really, really love that song. And I play it, I think, every So-So Friday. That, of course, is XTC. The name of the song is Easter Theater. Beats the hell out of Put On Your Easter Bonnet with All the Frills Upon It and Easter... Yes. No, this is a really smart lyric, you know, overtones of paganism. You know who XTC are, Andy Partridge and others. Gold sun rolls around, chocolate nipple brown, tumble from your arms like the ground your breasts swell. Land awake from sleep, hairs will kick and leap, flowers climb erect, smiling from the moist kiss of her rainbow mouth. Odin mounts the tree, bleeds for you and me, splashing on the lamb, gambling with spring's step. Buds will laugh and burst, racing to be first, turning all the soil as the promptress fingers through her spinning script. You don't just get that every day. No. Easter Theater by XTC. And, of course, it's worth remembering that Easter is just another one of those occasions when the Christian Church, desperate to have to assume some sort of relevance and heritage, bogarted older traditions. Here in the Western Hemisphere, death and rebirth was represented in the form of a deity named Xipe Totec, who appears as one having been flayed. Xipe Totec translates from Nahuatl as the dear one flayed. And among other things, get this. He flayed himself, Xipe Totec did, and bled to provide sustenance and life to humanity. You know, the common savior of humanity. Self-sacrifice. Uh-huh. And somehow or another, the Mesoamerican peoples came up with that idea without ever having met a Christian. Amazing, isn't it? And the idea of the flaying, where that comes from, you want to talk about brilliant symbology. The flaying comes from the fact that before they can germinate, a seed of maize, you call it corn, a seed of maize has to shed its outer skin. And by shedding its outer skin, the maize seed can then germinate and grow up and become one of the most nutritious plant-based foods in all of human history. Maize, corn. As Michael Pollan noted years ago, most people on planet Earth now eat a diet that is comprised of corn and diesel fuel. Diesel fuel because of the machinery that's used to run the machines that plant and harvest the corn. I find that to be fascinating. But the Mesoamerican version, the Middle Eastern version, the Bronze Age version, there's a Northern Germanic Scandinavian version. There's an even older Middle Eastern version, Eostre, Ishtar, goddess of the moon. principal deity in charge of the brewing of beer. Mm-hmm. So, it is not at all unusual for human beings at about this time of year to make observation of the renewed fertility that comes with spring. Of course, it's exactly opposite south of the equator. But everybody takes some form of notice of it. I'm sure there's a similar one, a similar deity in the pantheon of gods in the Indian subcontinent, of which there are tens of thousands, that does something similar, sacrifices him or herself for the survival, the salvation, if you will, of the species. Yeah, which means that, you know, maybe Christianity just gets it wrong, or has to tie it up in a bunch of blood-cursed martyrdom. Yeah, who knows? 9 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. Still waiting on word from Sparky as to when we will begin the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. Oh, let's see. What? Oh, one more thing. So this is just local. But our friends in the medical professions might be some help in this, because I'm kind of stumped. Notices have gone out to about 2,300 people in southern West Virginia. The 2,300 people in question had something done that I had done a couple of weeks ago myself. They had a nuclear stress test. You know, they put a bunch of dye, they run a bunch of dye into your veins and take a picture of your heart, and then they put you on a treadmill and make you work your heart out until, you know, you've got a really, you've really got it pumping and going on. And then they put more dye in you, and they take another picture of your heart to compare and see if there are any blockages or coronary artery disease, that kind of thing. It's not routine, but it is a valuable diagnostic tool. And 2,300 people went to a private, for-profit clinic specializing in doing nuclear stress tests. It's called the Raleigh Heart Clinic. And they are those 2,300 people are being advised now to have themselves tested for hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and HIV. Thus far, between March 1st, 2012 and March 27th, 2015, a total of 12 cases of hepatitis have been linked to the Raleigh Heart Clinic. 8 patients got hepatitis C after a stress test on 3 different days. 4 patients got hepatitis B after a stress test on 2 different days. The newspaper story I'm looking at here from the Charleston Gazette says that there have not been any instances of HIV transmission of which anyone is aware, but because the virus is transmitted the same way as hepatitis, patients are recommended to get tested, according to the West Virginia Department Bureau of Public Health that we mentioned there, who gave the pass to Mike Cadle for having poisoned people with raw milk. Okie dokie. The clinic is run by Dr. Thayer Barghouti and Secretary Vice President Nala Barghouti. They run this thing for profit. It is not part of a hospital. It's just a standalone clinic that does stress tests. And I'm kind of stumped here. How do you... I mean... The dyes and stuff... Aren't these things supposed to be sterile when they're used? And isn't hepatitis B and hepatitis C... Aren't they transmitted through the use of compromised or unclean things like needles? I mean, isn't this why we have, in more enlightened communities, needle exchanges for heroin addicts? So that they're not just, oh, here, I'm done with it. Yeah, you use it. Right? This is supposed to be single-use stuff? And yet the Raleigh Heart Clinic has given at least 12 people hepatitis? Is it just me, or does this sound like capitalism? Is it just me, or does this sound like maximizing profit by reusing stuff that isn't supposed to be reused? Now, it wasn't all that long ago that we had pain clinics in a pain clinic in West Virginia that was poisoning people with impurely compounded IV medications. And I think they killed some people. And, of course, they weren't being run as any part of a hospital either. They were just little mom-and-pop medicine shops, because free market, because freedom, because Merca. Oh, all right. The greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, amen, under God, in God we trust. Now, the lawsuit has already been filed. It's a class action filed against the clinic on behalf of patients who had cardiac stress tests at the clinic during the three-year time period outlined by state health officials. And there's another question, if we may. Why three-year time period? I mean, question one is, why did it happen even once? Question two is, okay, it happened once. How come it happened twice? And question three is, what? 12 times? What? 2,300 people were potentially exposed? One of my favorite paragraphs out of the story says, testing is available through the Raleigh Heart Clinic, patient's own health care provider, or through a local health department. Patients are asked to bring a copy of the letter they received to the staff performing the test. Because you're just going to go back to the Raleigh Heart Clinic to have blood drawn for an HIV, Hep B, Hep C test. At the same place that may have given you HIV, Hep B, or, you know, Hep C. More than 95% of the 2,300 people who were exposed to the viruses are from the southern part of West Virginia. Are there similar stories from other parts of the country? Maybe there's a similar story from a for-profit heart clinic in Flint. Or is this an isolated incident confined to hillbillies who are left at the tender mercies of the free fucking market? You tell me. People with hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and HIV may not have symptoms for years, so health officials say testing is important, even for patients who do not feel ill. So, once again, a few hillbillies get poisoned in the name of profit. Yeah, well, I mean, That's what your hillbillies are for. Although, interestingly, something that sort of, I don't know that it dovetails, but it weaves back and forth in a sort of serpentine double helix of sorts, I think. Turns out, West Virginia is being depopulated. You know, ethnically cleansed. The population of West Virginia's most coal-rich, according to the story, counties has declined by about 2% in the last year. Now, granted, they're not all that, you know, they didn't all die. Some of them did. Remember, we lose about 1,400, we have about 1,400 statistical excess deaths here in mountaintop removal counties in West Virginia. But the population of McDowell County, an entire county that once upon a time had over 100,000 people living in it, the population of McDowell County is down to less than 20,000. Population's falling in Boone County, in Mingo County, in Logan County, Wyoming County. Because coal is good for West Virginia. Right. But I really, unless somebody can send me an email or a tweet or something else showing that this happens other places all the time, I'm beginning to feel like West Virginia and Central Appalachia generally are just a little bit put upon. I'm wondering if the lax attitudes that attach to the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection have now sort of metastasized over to the West Virginia Bureau of Public Health. How do you get to go into business as a for-profit heart clinic doing stress tests and injecting people with contrast materials and whatnot without the state making absolutely rigorously sure that nobody who goes there for services is going to get hepatitis? I mean, there's no, I don't think there's an oopsie-daisy aspect to hepatitis B and hepatitis C transmission. Lottie in the chat room tells me, Bob, there's an incubation time before any signs of illness are manifest. During that time period, more stress tests were performed using the same batch. Well, yeah, one of the references in the story says, Bureau of Public Health Chief Rahul Gupta said, besides reusing needles, the viruses could also have been transmitted by medical staff reusing single-use vials of medicine, not wearing proper equipment, or not cleansing the area of the injection site. So, let's review how to get hepatitis B or C or possibly HIV in a West Virginia for-profit coronary cardiac stress test for-profit mom-and-pop shop. Reuse the needles, reuse the single-use vials of medication, don't wear proper equipment, and don't cleanse the area of the injection site, and doesn't all of this kind of point to another issue, to wit, hiring people to do this stuff who apparently have been exposed or carry or are actively infected by hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and, you know, possibly HIV. Of course, in a state that is absolutely burned up with both prescription narcotic addiction and overdose and heroin addiction and overdose, I guess, you know, you're just going to have a few slip through the cracks. Question, why are there allowed to be cracks? Well, because, you know, you don't want that. You don't want that Kenyan Muslim, you slurpers, job-killing FDA coming in here and killing jobs while the people with the jobs are killing West Virginians. Right? Okay. If you can't tell, and you know, I'm not sitting here worrying that I got exposed, that I had my stress test done in a hospital. Hopefully that counts for something. Although, over there in the same town where I had my stress test, they've got a for-profit cardiac stress test mom-and-pop shop. And guess what? They charge about $1,000 less than the hospital does for the testing. So they're trying to do a volume business and undercut the competition. Because they don't have all the overhead that the hospital does, you know, clean needles and shit. If I'm overreacting, feel free to tell me. But would you go to a clinic that was known to have infected a dozen people with hepatitis? Is that just the cost o' doing business? I don't know. Yes, that's exactly it, Diane, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan, says, let me get this straight. People pay for a stress test that gives them lots more stress. Different stress. Here's a doozy out of the same story. The clinic was closed from March 27th until March 30th, 2015. 4 whole days. Maybe 3. While the clinic adhered to several instructions from state officials, Gupta said. Those instructions included only using single-use medications, switching to needleless injection systems, and having the staff and physician undergo injection safety practice training and other training. You notice that instructions included only using single-use medications. But wait, Gupta said the viruses could have been transmitted by medical staff reusing single-use vials of medicine. So they gave them training on only using single-use vials of medicine, which, because money, because profit, because capitalism, because freedom, they might just as well choose to reuse anyway. I mean, are there two doses in a vial of single-use medication? Or are you making up a dose out of the dregs of a lot of different single-use vials? Because, see, for some reason or another, I'm able to just... A whole bunch of little nightmare scenarios just keep cropping up, as Lottie says in the chat room. You're not overreacting, Bob, but it's the new normal. They're for profit. What the hell do you think the odds are that they implemented the suggestions? And when I say I'd like to know if this is happening somewhere else in America, I'm not saying I want it to be happening somewhere else in America. But there's something about this, because profit is involved, because the making of money is involved, because avarice, greed are involved. Because, you know, you don't reuse a needle because you don't know better. You do that because somewhere along the way, you've consulted your accountant, and your accountant has said, well, I'll tell you what, that single-use needle cost, you got a bunch. Now, wait a minute. So we're going to do this, too. Back when I was told about the for-profit mom-and-pop shop stress test outfit over in Somersville, they told me that they went for about $1,500 a pop. We've got 2,300 people times $1,500. Son of a bitch, that works up some real walking around money pretty quick. Just the 2,300 people who were exposed during the period from March 1st, 2012 to March 27th, 2015, 3 years, those 2,300 people accounted for something on the order of $3,450,000, which, wait a minute, I don't want to trust math in my head for this. And so that works out to about $1,150,000 per year. Good work if you can get it. And if you get it, won't you tell me how? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, Billable Rick with an email says, no, you're not overreacting, Bob. The practice of that business reminds me of the French company in the late 1980s. Who knowingly distributed AIDS-tainted blood to transfusion patients. These kinds of stories make me long for Chinese justice. You know, where they put a bullet in the back of the head of the corporate criminal and send his family a bill for the cost of the bullet. Or at least, you know, some jail time. But that's the other thing about this story. And it shares that in common with the story about God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, raw milk-swilling, Christ-centered, evangelical delegate Mike Cadel of Huntington, West Virginia. The Bureau of Public Health has announced that no charges will be filed since it was a first offense. Now I'm operating under the assumption that the reporter for this story out of the Gazette and you know for a small town newspaper it's probably a small market newspaper I don't know how you measure markets in newspaper land, but for a newspaper of its size, the Gazette does some genuinely fine reporting and some real journalism. So I'm presuming that Lori Kersey, who is the reporter on this story, would have, and in light of the fact that she also reported on the fact that a lawsuit has been filed, I'm operating under the assumption that she would have included it in the copy of her story if a criminal investigation was underway. Because this is the kind of story where you don't call and say, oh, by the way, is there a criminal investigation underway? There's not a no, what we get What we get instead is Dr. Rahul Gupta said the clinic has been cooperative with the investigation. Mm-hmm. Well, as long as they were cooperative with the investigation, I guess we probably shouldn't think about putting Dr. Thayer Barghouti or Nala Barghouti in the Great Bar Hotel now, should we? I mean, they make $1 million a year. We don't put millionaires in prison in West Virginia or much of anywhere else in the United States of America. No, hell no, we don't. I mean, we had three Nijinskys who, through varying degrees of negligence, gross negligence, and willful and wanton reckless conduct, managed to poison 300,000 people. And you know what the federal judge said about them? This man is obviously not a criminal. He just poisoned 300,000 people is all. Go and sin no more down at your palatial estate in Florida that no one will be able to touch to get remuneration for your having participated in poisoning them. You, obviously not a criminal. You? Go ye. Live and be well. Dogman asks, what sentence did Blankenship get? He has not, to the best of my knowledge, been sentenced as yet. But he can't face more than, what, 6 months? Because it just wouldn't be fair. This man is obviously not a criminal! Yeah, but for fuck's sake, don't be caught with more than 15 grams of weed in your pocket, because that means you are one. Or if you're hopelessly addicted to heroin, don't be caught with it, because that means you are a criminal. Oh, and by the way, a little something talking about addiction there. A little bit of new and breaking news. Did you know about this? Again, because capitalism, because, you know, look, black market products are the ultimate capitalism. There are no regulations. There are no standards. There is nothing but the powers of the market. And the market drives all. Well, it turns out that some of the people who are overdosing and dying, who are opiate addicts and heroin addicts, well, it turns they're not dying because they just got a bad batch of heroin. You know, if you've read Keith Richards' autobiography, which is fascinating, by the way, you know that he credits his longevity to having made sure that he always only got the cleanest heroin. Well, you know, some people don't. Philip Seymour Hoffman apparently didn't. And there are people overdosing all over the United States, and wow, a whole bunch of them are white folks. So, you know, that's probably why we care. But they're overdosing on heroin because they don't know that the people who are producing the heroin, who, and you know, the street term is to step on drugs that one is selling, is to adulterate them or cut their strength. Well, they're not cutting the strength anymore. They're just cutting back on the amount of heroin in the dose. And they're replacing some of the heroin with fentanyl. But of course, it's not fentanyl that's produced in a pharmaceutical lab. It's, well, the term for it is IMF, which curiously is the same letters used for International Monetary Fund. I'm sure that has nothing to do with it, though.
No.
Illicitly manufactured fentanyl. And fentanyl will stop your ass breathing quickety-quick. And so in the ultimate capitalist market for street heroin, people are overdosing and dying because they're cooking up their usual heroin dose, not knowing that there's that the upstanding capitalists who are providing said to them somewhere up the line have stepped all over the heroin with fentanyl. Because money. Because capitalism. Because freedom. Yeah. You get the idea. So, separate topic, Dogman along the way says, I still can't understand how the ash pools are allowed in hilly West Virginia. Well, first of all, let's be clear. There are coal ash impoundments, and those are nearby to coal-fired electric power plants. And those are generally on flat places near rivers like the John Amos plant or the plant down here at Glasgow, West Virginia. But the real toxic nightmares are the slurry impoundments, Dogman. And they are not only allowed, they have been permitted all over the state. And those hold back billions of gallons, not of coal ash, but of a devil's brew stew of things like methyl chlorohexane methanol, which is what poisoned 300,000 people in the 9-county area of West Virginia a couple of years ago, in addition to other coal chemicals, in addition to coal itself, in addition to clay and impurities, in addition to a laundry list of poison that would shock the conscience of the devil himself. And all those things are held back behind dams that are basically built of mud. And near to which coal companies are allowed to blast. So you ask Dogman, how can they allow it? Well, they allow it because the coal companies want them. And the coal companies get what the coal companies want. See how it works? Yeah. Hey, it's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Friday on the Front Porch conversation here at 18 minutes before the final hour of the program. And a reminder, if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch and you would like to, simply send a contact request on Skype, and Skype is very easy. Send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and include in your contact request a note about Friday on the Front Porch or FOTFP or some permutation thereof so that Sparky will then know that if once he friends you, that you're not going to ask him to participate in a scheme to transfer money for the Nigerian widow of a millionaire Saudi prince who died of cancer. Okay? Okay. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
How are you here? I'm fine now. I'm back from town.
Town okay?
Oh, yeah. Still there.
Good, good, good.
Just had to run up and pick the wife up from the eye doctor. She's getting checked for her new glasses now after the cataract surgery, finally.
Did that all go okay?
Yep. So in 2 weeks, I got to go back, and it's on Friday. I only do it on Friday. The doctor, the one ophthalmologist, is only there on Fridays. So up Friday on the front porch, 2 weeks.
Well, now, I was given to understand by my eye care specialist a couple of weeks ago that with the modern advances in the technology surrounding the implants for cataract surgery now, that people often don't even require glasses after cataract surgery. It used to be you had to wear those big, thick, you know, but he said that that's all changed.
Well, she can see good enough to get around and watch TV and stuff, but she can't read. She can't drive right with the way her eyes are now. So
okay.
That's where we're at.
Yeah, I'm learning as I go. Tell her that we hope her continued recovery is swift and complete.
Well, it's complete now. They wouldn't get glasses until it was complete.
Oh, okay.
The eyes had, she had pressure on her eyes or something. They weren't working right yet. So now they are.
Good deal. And, of course, I was told that, you know, another 10, 15 years I'll be dealing with it too. So I guess all eating all those carrots just didn't quite get the job done.
It's a crapshoot with your eyes, I think.
Yeah. And I guess it's just part of the aging process. By the way, I just got a on that story about the Heart Center here in Raleigh County. Got a note from Jack in Shreveport saying, "You've got it all wrong, Bob, on trying to find out what was going wrong at that center. This is a perfect example of a problem that could be solved with tort reform. We don't want trial lawyers out there trying to put doctors out of business. I know we're not really talking about doctors here, but things would probably be phrased something like that." And absolutely, no, one of them, Dr. Thayer Barghouti, he's got a doctor in front of his name. Yeah. And before we go to the greater conversation, a note from our buddy Steve in China, an overseas perspective, yesterday's program. "If nothing else, there should definitely be a moratorium on the amount of time that can be devoted to the analysis, commentary, prognosis, and general dissection that goes into and follows the American political process of selecting a presidential candidate. Nothing new there. We expend entirely too much energy on the whole thing, to the degree that the actual operation of government is made secondary to our eventual absorption into the inescapable round of political fanfare and posturing. No wonder we're reduced to the subliteracy of an endless soap opera. Since when did this interminable advertisement for a kind of political product begin to replace the actual and legitimate function of government itself? Too long ago to recall? I don't know what the exact date is, but it's the minute that television figured out that it could make a freaking mint every couple of years off political advertising." Steve says, "And don't tell me about the modern media, their super saturated preoccupations with pushing one viewpoint or another, or the sophistication of the modern voter, or even the voter's ignorance. Bullshit. What's always important is a thing of simplicity itself, that one is allowed to vote, that one is ready to cast a ballot, that the ballot is honestly counted. We are free to make up our minds in our own time, and either as early or as late as we wish to. We certainly don't need to be hammered and pounded and pulverized to the point of sheer numbness with the sorry menu of candidates with which we have been practically forever presented. We have a Congress that hasn't done a lick of real work in years. We are reduced to considering the virtue or vice of an executive office that is sorrowfully limited as it operates in a virtual vacuum. We've forgotten how to tally the popular vote itself. And so we prattle on and on to tears about the next installment. Remedy? Make up your mind, sow your seed in the meantime, have a republic. Regards, signed, Steve in China, where no one has a choice, by the way." Yeah. Good thoughts. Thank you, Steve. Let's check out some other members. I need to mention this, by the way. I talked about John's challenge at the beginning of the program, and I'm happy to announce that our buddy Gary Laborman met the challenge, and then our good friend Cindy in the Great Northwest pushed it along. So that's a really big deal, and it's a Well, it's much appreciated, and it's a great opportunity to maybe get out ahead if we dare even consider something like that. Because remember, you know, the fundraising goal is a minimum, not a maximum. So we have that. So if anybody wants to jump out there and go alongside Labor Man and Cindy, you are more than welcome to do it, and it would be a great benefit. So thank you, both of you, and thank you to John for putting it all in motion. Okay, I see we have Billable Rick and Tim and Jules and Charlie in the conversation this evening. More to come if you want to participate. Good evening, Billable Rick. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Bob. Happy Rock and Roll Friday. I changed my screen picture to the front of the Bruce Springsteen shirt I'm wearing today.
Oh, yay. Are you going to the show? Or have you been?
No. I went to it on March 19th, last Saturday. It was a great show.
Oh, okay. So it's already come and gone.
So
how long did he play?
He played 4 hours. Yeah, it was crazy.
I remember when he was playing 4 hours 30 years ago.
I know. And he's like 66 now. So, you know, if I could play 4 hours and I'm 66, geez, I'll be way ahead of the game, you know? But best damn concert I've ever been to. I mean, it was just, he hits all the notes still. You know, the instrumentation of the entire band is just so excellent. And he really seems to have a good heart, you know? Just so much positive energy, you know? I really, really like the man. He's a great man, you know? I saw him like 31 years earlier during his Born in the USA tour. And he's like even upped his game since then, in my opinion, you know? He was great then, but is even better now. It was his 34th show and final show at the Sports Arena, which is getting torn down, I think, later this month. But he loved that place for whatever reason, even though I think it must be the acoustics. I think one of my favorites is the third to last song was Wrecking Ball, which was very appropriate. and the very last song was Bobby Jean. The one song he didn't play, which is just as well, I suppose, because it was kind of overplayed in the 80s, was Born in the USA.
Oh, good. The song that the Reagan administration, Reagan campaign tried to bogart and had to be told by Bruce, cut that out.
Yeah, I mean, do Republicans, what do they play? Lawrence Welk songs for their theme songs?
If they hear a song with Merca or USA in it, they assume that it has to be a patriotic anthem. When in fact, with anybody with an IQ above freezing were to sit down and actually read the lyrics to Born in the USA, you'd go, no, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. But it was kind of interesting because after, like, he took the stage about half an hour late, took the stage at like 8 o'clock, supposed to start at 7:30. He played straight through, and they turned the stadium lights on at like 11:30, and he and his band just ignored that. And they played like another half an hour after that. He did some crowd surfing at one point in time, which was kind of cool. He had a couple of people come up on the stage, and one guy actually got to play a guitar with him in one of the songs. And he for Dancing in the Dark, he actually danced with a female member of the audience. It was really cool, you know. What I like about him is he's got a real good work ethic. I mean, how many bands play, you know, 3.5-4 hours? Hardly anybody. You know, most of these bands, like, you know, like, let's say Justin Bieber or these new artists and so forth.
You know, I could have gone for weeks on end without him being mentioned, but go ahead.
Okay, well, anyway, you might get 90 minutes out of them if you're lucky for a show, and
that's assuming they've got 90 minutes of material.
Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
And do we know has Bruce endorsed anybody in the campaign? Is he feeling the burn?
You know, I don't know if he has. My guess is that he is a Bernie guy, most likely. You know, you may remember he's campaigned for the Democratic candidate a number of times. I know what I remember is in 2004 when John Kerry was running, he had some concerts and some appearances with John Kerry in Ohio.
Right.
Which, of course, you know, might have helped, but then you had Ken Blackwell rigging the election, that election, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
Strategically having, you know, not enough, you know, voting machines in the Democratic precincts and districts, you know? So, anyhow, that's my concert report. It was just tremendous. I just, you know, I had good company, too. My friend, we had a good time. And I guess it was our third date.
This is your doctor friend?
This is my doctor friend, Laura, yeah. And I'm not going to call her Dr. Laura, okay? Haven't yet, I'm not going to.
We're all tremendously grateful for that.
Wouldn't be prudent, as George Bush would say. George H.W. would have said, you know?
Exactly. Well, let me hop over and get a few other folks in. Jules, welcome to the conversation on this here Friday on the front porch.
Good evening. How is everyone?
We're muddling along, I think.
Good. Well, I'm glad that everything turned out for you Tuesday. I think everyone was quite worried, especially when we started hearing you talk about your brakes and the calipers coming off. And
well, no, the caliper didn't come off. The brake pad fell out.
Or the brake pads fell off the calipers. That's what I was saying.
I felt like I was living an episode of who are that Australian comedy duo, and they've got the one bit where they're talking about the coal hauling freighter and the front fell off. It's just made of cardboard. The front fell off. The caliper's fine. The brake pad just fell out. They do that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, and I've actually never heard of that before.
Me either.
I cannot fathom it. But I mean, I just changed my brakes here this fall, my back brakes, and it's like I'm putting them in my brain again. I'm thinking, how the, you know, but anywho.
Well, no, apparently they're not glued in or nailed in.
No, they're not. They're just put in by those clips, and so yeah.
Just click, bip, and nothing. And the thing that I found distressing is, you know, there's not an idiot light for it, but when your brake pads are going, they're supposed to be designed such that they give off a squeal, or you know, where you can kind of undeniably know that it's brakes time.
Well, that's built into the pad itself, so
never,
you know,
never
if the pad
did.
Isn't there, then you can't hear the squeal.
Well, there's that too. So I guess the brake pad fell out before it was worn out. Because the brake pad wasn't worn out on the other side.
You know what I go by, Bob? When I hear the sound of metal to metal, I know that I need to get my brake pads.
Well,
which is actually kind of too late.
Well, that's kind of where I was. I didn't mean to be there. And damned if the back of that rotor didn't look like something you could play on a turntable.
Yeah, and you got to replace those if they get too badly damaged. They're expensive.
And I did.
Oh,
and
damn.
And so I'm going to have to do the other one on the passenger side soon, and then after we scrape up, then we'll go and do the rear. And yeah.
Sounds like you need a new equipment fund there, a vehicle equipment fund, Bob.
Well, no. We'll just get it done as can be.
Okay.
Because I mean, I'm sitting here. Wait a minute. I'm sitting here having to, you know, smack the board to get halfway decent microphone-age out of it, so there you go.
That's what I did with my TV when I was in college in the early 80s, Bob. That worked all the time.
Until it didn't, exactly.
Until
whatever it is that's knocking back into contact just completely loses all contact.
Exactly.
Well, you know, Bob, it is cheaper to do them yourself. They're not that terribly difficult, I mean... I think I did mine about.
I do not do my own anything on an automobile.
Oh, okay.
I don't do my own wiring either. And you know why? Because I am an English major.
Well, I'm a biology and a chemistry major.
Well, those that's vaguely associated with science, which isn't that far from engineering. And so, you know, you've got a fighting chance. I'm gonna get the wheel off and write a fucking ode, okay? I mean,
Well, the woman was a bit of a bugger because the caliper had actually locked up. The whole thing had locked up, so I had to replace the rotor, too.
Yeah, those little bastards will seize up. I was lucky in this instance because he was able to grind the uneven wear off of them, so, you know, they'll keep working for a while. Because that's that godforsaken caliper was going to be $160.
Oh, yeah.
That's what happens when you buy Maybach, Bob, you know?
Well, it is. It is. I mean, you know, parts for Maybachs and you don't even want to talk about the parts cost for my my Bugatti Veyron. See, you just don't. I mean, the tires alone are $2,000 a piece.
Yeah, that's
Bob,
a bit much.
Yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
Bob, after the brake pads wear out, you still got about a half inch of piston you can go.
Well, and that's apparently what I was running. That's apparently what I was running on, Charlie. And that's what got ground.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a man born out of time. I think I probably come from an era before the invention of the, you know, wheel. Yeah, see, okay, I'm not alone. Lady Tsuki in the chat room says, I feel your pain, Bob. All I know about cars is engine make car go vroom vroom. Yeah, that's about me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can...
Yeah, but when you hadn't got any money, you learn real quickly.
Well, you do, and then you learn that you get what you pay for when you press the brake pedal and it sort of goes to the floor and stays right there on the floor, and it's kind of like stepping on a plum.
That's when you open the door and hang your leg.
Yep. Yep. Me and Fred Flintstone. Wilma! Hey, Tim, are you there?
I don't know if he is, Bob.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's fine. You never know with him.
Well,
he's showing there.
Yeah, Tim's like the wind. That's okay.
I found out something about cars today.
Yes.
My stepson's here. He got a 2000 Buick from this old gal up there where he lives. Gave him the car. And it's got one of them damn key fob things that you can unlock the doors and all that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they only had one of them. So he went and ordered a replacement.
$400 affair?
No. It wasn't that expensive. But then he has two key fobs. Well, he programs the new one, and when you program the new one, it cancels out the old one.
So then you have to program. So then you have to program the other one, and it cancels out the one you just programmed. I mean, is it a loop?
No, it won't. It won't cancel out the old one. The old one won't program anymore.
Oh, it's
You gotta buy a matching set together and program it with the brand new at the same time, and then it'll work.
Oh, for pity's sakes! Then why didn't they sell you a pair?
Well, they didn't know that. They ordered it online. They just ordered it. I don't know where they bought it from or anything, but he sat there last night trying to get both the program right, and then finally we look at a video today, and this guy in the video says, of course, when you program the new one, your old one won't work anymore.
No, that sounds like something that would happen to me.
Mm. Oh, I watched the video of that guy shooting the lawnmower, making it blow up. I showed it, the link in the chat room.
Oh, there's video? I didn't see video.
Yeah.
I mean, did it show his leg shearing away? I mean, that's kind of ooky.
No, it didn't show it. He kept walking towards it. He had an automatic weapon and he kept shooting at it. And then he keeps walking closer and closer to it finally explodes. Well, then when it explodes, the camera goes down on the ground or something. The guy behind him fell, went down. And then he's just laying there, and he's going, I blew my leg off. And he's calling an ambulance, and that was it.
How close was he when he finally... Wiley Coyote Presley was... Wow.
About 25 yards.
Wow. And, you know, at the same time, I'm reminded of the fact that long and long ago, they forbade the sale of lawn darts. Remember lawn darts?
Yeah, those are dangerous, as we all know, Bob.
Those damn things will hurt you.
Yeah. Well, I would say that man is the winner of the Darwin Award for the week, you know?
They just had a...
No, Rick, he can't be because Wayne LaPierre said gun owners are smarter than all the people who don't own guns.
Well, I was always taught that any categorical statement is almost always false. You know, like all.
Ways, ever, for, see, supra, yes.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, what a delight.
And he probably doesn't have insurance.
Well, yeah. Down in Georgia, Stan, abs-da-damn-lutely not.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, they'll patch him up at the county or whatever and fit him with a prosthetic leg, and the taxpayers of Georgia will pay for it, right?
No, in Georgia, he won't get a prosthetic leg.
No?
No. They just, you know, they'll just put a little soot and lard combination on the stump and send him on his way.
There you go. Maybe put a peg out there to have a peg sticking out of it.
Because
right?
He didn't bring a chicken to the emergency room.
Jeez.
Well, you can't get fitted for a prosthetic leg until the stump's all healed.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
It has to heal and it has to shrink down because the skin and the muscle naturally kind of atrophies a bit. So it takes a while before you can be fitted.
Right.
And you know, I'm not making fun of the guy, and I'm not celebrating it, but, you know, goddamn. And the larger issue is that there are rednecks out there all over the country who can just go and buy 3 pounds of Tannerite. I mean, was it a pretty good boom, Sparky?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. Coming to a courthouse near you. Mm-hmm. Wonder if the FBI is aware. I mean, how does this escape the attention of the ATF? Why, you know, Tim sent the email in saying, well, you know, this is illegal in California. Why is it legal anywhere? I mean, God, at least they have to keep records of the amount of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil that they deliver to these mountaintop removal sites. But, you know, down to Billy Joe Bob Bubba's gun and pawn, how much Tannerite you got? I don't know. Got a truck coming today. Wow.
Is that the same stuff the terrorists used in the Belgium attacks?
No, I don't think so.
That's different.
No, it's the same stuff that the terrorists used in the Murrah Federal Building attack.
Oh, the ammonium nitrate.
Yeah, okay, it's white folks' explosive.
Right, right.
My stepson was watching a TV program earlier today. He said, you know what an anvil looks like, how heavy one is?
Sure.
Well, they take one anvil and they turn it over and it's hollowed out. And they fill it full of gunpowder. And then they set another anvil on top of it. And then somehow they set it off. They're not close to it. But see, the winner is whoever gets the anvil closest to where they blew it up from. It fires it up like 200 feet in the air.
Yeah, okay.
Now, who the hell would think up something like that?
Well, I don't know. Is this a function of boredom?
I would imagine.
I mean, I remember that great phrase that I learned courtesy of Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker, who directed me to someone on Facebook called Eric E., whose mission in life is apparently to go around upbraiding ignorant right-wingers when they do ignorant right-wing things. And I remember the line, sister fisting meth gobblers. And, you know, you see Brother Presley in Monroe, Georgia, or you kind of go, him? Yeah, probably.
But some of these reality TV shows are just plain crazy anymore. That's where people get a lot of ideas from, I think, is watching these stupid shows.
God almighty. Okay, so Clarence just sent me a video that I'm watching right now. I'm not sending the audio out or anything. It's strictly a visual. Clarence says, these people have nothing better to do. And this is titled 30 pound... Wait, no, really? It's titled 30 pounds of Tannerite versus 79 Ford Bronco. Here's another one. 164 pounds of Tannerite kills a barn. Let's see. Tannerite explained and demonstrated. Boom. This is charming. 200-pound hog versus 8 pounds Tannerite. Tannerite pipeline. Largest recorded Tannerite explosion.
Jesus Christ.
This is not a boating accident.
Hey, there's Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Here I is. Sorry, my neighbors were kind of noisy, so...
Okay, so at least this yahoo has his 79 Ford Bronco, you know, a right rock solid, looks like quarter mile away. And they've got a bench rest for their military style semi-automatic assault weapons. Maybe a half a mile away, I don't know. But you can set this off just by shooting it?
You need a high-powered bullet, and they said that you need to be 100 feet for every pound of Tannerite.
Yeah, dude in Georgia, Sparky just told us, was like 25 feet. He started shooting and walking
25
toward the
yards.
25, okay. Started shooting and walking toward the target.
It was like 45 feet away.
With an assault weapon.
Now, to be fair, this genius is just shooting from like a folding conference table. So I guess he's counting on none of the shrapnel being able to reach him. Kind of makes you want to go on YouTube and look up Tannerite fail.
Hey, I got a new song, Bob.
Yeah?
I fought the Tannerite, and the Tannerite won.
That could work.
Yeah.
Oh man, they go through the whole process here, you know, of showing you the Tannerite, and then they go down and I guess they put the Tannerite on or in the 79 Ford Bronco and by the way, just one of those moments of karma. Or I hope it's not karma. I went over to Beckley today to pick up our holiday ham. We're going to go over and have pre-Easter tomorrow with the grandbabies. There's a special request. There was ham, and they want some of Opa's fabulous deviled eggs. Okay, the Ford Bronco went boom, and there's just not much left of it now. And yeah, you can see pieces flying away from it for a very, very, very long distance. So I got the ham, And on the way back, I passed a pickup truck hauling a little enclosed barred trailer with three hogs in it on Good Friday before Easter. And I looked at him and I just said, sorry, guys, really, sorry. It's not such a good Friday for you, is it? I mean, the universe is still trying to make a damn vegetarian out of me. I don't know if it's going to win.
Hey, I got an idea.
Yes.
You know what Trump could do? Trump could put some Tannerite in a hog container and set it off in the middle of Mecca or something like that, you know?
Don't give him any ideas. Okay, no, at this point in time, I think, you know about this allegedly unfolding scandal with Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The National Enquirer reporting that he has had, that he's been a-romping with at least five women's.
Is it true that two of them have denied it already?
Well, at least one has, because she denied it when she was confronted with it on CNN today.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that another one has denied it, too. I don't know what my source for that is. That was my understanding. I mean, this could be payback for what, Ted Cruz's PAC did in Utah, sending voters pictures of Melania, you know, in a very provocative pose, I guess. I wouldn't put it past T-Rump to try to get even like that.
Well,
you know?
But see, there's one thing at work here, Rick, and, you know, you're the lawyer. And especially in light of the recent Hulk Hogan case, there are such things as libel laws.
Right.
And Hulk Hogan just got awarded by a trial court the princely sum of $115 million in an invasion of privacy suit against Gawker. Now, I have a feeling this will probably be overturned on appeal. I don't know how you feel about it, but the rule of law that holding establishes is a little bit nuts, to wit, if you have sex with your best friend's wife and with your best friend's connivance, and your best friend also happens to have set up a camera to report you or to record you doing the rompin' nasty with said wife, and then turns around and leaks the video to an outlet which then publishes same, the outlet is on the hook for what your best friend did and you did. And of course, the best friend involved.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
Was a shock jock, and how this got past the jury, I don't know. Was a shock jock who made his living doing this kind of outrageous stuff, and goes by the name of Bubba the Love Sponge.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I know that guy.
Sounds like Breitbart. Sounds like something Breitbart would have done, you know.
Well, it sounds like something James O'Keefe would do. But within the larger universe of things...
Oh, O'Keefe, I meant.
Within the larger universe, the reason I mention this is that so the National Enquirer publishes this, and, you know, there's a history of people successfully suing the Enquirer for false and defamatory information. Carol Burnett was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the libel laws really do work. Under the
wasn't there a tennis star who was like supposedly pregnant for 19 months who sued the National Enquirer as well?
I don't remember that, but the larger point is that A, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, is a lawyer. B, he's not just a lawyer, he is, in the words of Cher in Clueless, a litigator, you know, one of the mean ones. And C, truth is an absolute defense. And D, instead of saying these here are scurrilous lies and he needs to quit He needs to quit being mean to my beloved Heidi. The answer, Raffaelito, is to go sue the Inquirer post haste. Stand not upon the order of your going. Stand not upon the order of your suing, but sue at once. What, Rick, for the bonus round, what has Raffaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eaten future king of America, still not done?
No lawsuit.
He has not sued because... truth is an absolute defense.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my question is, when did we start taking the Inquirer as a news source?
Oh, it's been one for years. And it's not because the Inquirer got better. It's because the for-profit media deliberately sunk itself to the level of the Inquirer.
Oh, wow.
Well, the Inquirer got the story about John Edwards' infidelity correct. They got the O.J. story right. I read a tweet earlier from Trump, which basically linked Cruz to O.J. and Edwards.
The Times came out a couple of weeks ago, said they were about ready to expose something that Cruz did with affairs or something.
I thought something had come out about something about Rubio as well.
That might be why he decided to exit the contest, because there was all kinds of gay rent boy smoke around Marco the Magnificent.
Oh,
and see, let's understand something here. We're talking about Republicans. We're talking about white wingers. We're talking about upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals. And what that means is that as long as the romping being done by Raffaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eaten future king of America, was with a woe man, then all you have to do is cue up David Vitter and have a tinny whorehouse piano being played in the background by Jimmy Swaggart. I have sinned against you! And it's okay. All you got to do is go down, travel around the South, and before you've got 100 miles on your rental tractor, you will have seen a bumper sticker that says "Not perfect, just forgiven." We've got an object lesson in Alabama Governor Robert Bentley. Well, yeah, my wife did catch me making some dirty phone calls to that woman, but we never had sex. We never had sexual intercourse. Even though he was recorded talking about how he loved to put his arms on her God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered breasts. So, if you're a Republican, you can do this. I mean, do you remember when I think everybody in the country who wasn't a Republican or not a Christian cringed when they saw David Vitter haul his poor wife out there as she stood there while he said, "Well, yes, I did for a while there go and hire me some prostitutes. And we did romp outside the boundaries of the traditional family values of Republican marriage. Christian, but I have apologized to my wife and my family, and I've confessed my sins before God, and I'm here to tell you that Jesus has forgave me."
Praise be to God.
Hallelujah. Even if the next thing that happens is they release the really creepy audio recordings of Raffaelito speaking in tongues while making sexy time noises with a woman, not his wife, it won't matter. It won't stick to him because he's not perfect, just forgiven.
I guess that would explain Trump's success with the evangelicals to some extent, huh?
Well, they'll put up with anything as long as you say that you want to save the little fetuses, and and you'll repeal that goddamned Obamacare just as quick as you get to Washington. But the larger, you know, the larger horror is, as Charlie Pierce pointed out, trying to contemplate that there are actually six women on planet Earth who would be willing to have sex with Cruz.
That's the sad part. I mean, that's a really creepy, creepy part, and I cannot understand that one from a woman's perspective. Oh, God.
Oh, no, it can get real ugly real fast. All you have to do is watch. I mean, everybody got everybody got a bucket or a garbage can or a plastic grocery bag handy? Imagine Ted Cruz having sex.
And here goes my one.
Yeah, and the dinner hour just got ruined all over America.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks,
look,
Obama.
It ain't easy doing this work sometimes. I mean, sometimes you have to contemplate things that are really unpleasant.
Roger in Humboldt got his Skype updated.
Yay. Hey, Roger.
Hello.
Hello, Roger. I talked to you last Friday.
Hey, Rog.
I think it was a Friday or two before, but I thought I'd updated this machine, but apparently I hadn't. So Sparky told me I had to update, so I did some searching, and sure enough, I'm here.
How's the weather, Roger?
Windy and cold today. I can't get anything done. The ground's still too wet to disc, and I'm in a holding pattern.
Okay.
Nice over here in Valley.
About 75 or?
Sunday I'm headed up to Oregon for a couple of days, and then I'll come back, and hopefully it won't rain and I can get some work done.
So you've had a real wet spring, right? Pretty much the whole spring?
Oh, yeah. It takes about... No, I don't know. I think I had a 5-gallon bucket on the porch, and in less than a week, it was full of rainwater.
Jeez. A lot of rain.
Heck, I could have filled buckets off my gutters when it was raining here. Those one weekend.
Well, I'm not talking any rain gutters. I'm just talking about a bucket that I didn't empty out, and here we are a week and a half.
Yeah, I know,
later.
But it poured. I mean, it was just like my rain gutters were like garden hoses.
Well, looking at pictures of Shasta and Folsom, they filled up real quick.
Yeah, so Lake Oroville, too.
Are they totally full now?
Not quite.
I know Oroville's close.
Well, that's good. I mean, I guess between northern or southern Cal, it's better for it to rain or snow up there, because that's where southern Cal.
Yeah, it's good. There'll be more water for you guys to steal from us.
There you go. That's right. We'll win the water wars.
All right. Now, damn it, we're not going to have the water wars on Friday on the front porch. Now, let's stop this real quick.
Just call me Mulholland.
The last thing I heard was that the reservoirs in the north state depend more on snow melt, so even though they're higher than their annual average for this time of year because of the lack of snow, there's still a problem, but they are fuller than they normally are for this time of year.
There's more snow in the mountains this year than it's been in years, though.
Well, that may very well be, but the fact is, I don't think that more than for years, but I mean, Shasta was built in the 50s. Is there more snow than the historical average from the 50s?
I don't know. Looking at the mountain here today, it looks like there's a lot of snow on it.
Well,
there's a lot of snow on Lassen, I can tell you that by just walking out the back here.
What snow?
Not that we normally get a lot of snow on the ridge to the east of me. Normally, we see snow on it 4 or 5 times a winter, and I haven't seen snow on it at all. So to me, the snow level has risen, but I don't know how far.
oh, I think about 6,000-7,000 foot range. I know there's a lot of snow in the Trinity Alps too.
Well, when I go up to Oregon, I'm going up 101 to Florence and then cutting into Eugene. So I won't even see the Siskiyous.
All the ice on the south facing side of Mount Baldy's gone. North side, there's probably still some ice and snow.
Well, I think Southern Cal, Tim, is probably, I think we've had only an average rainfall year, if that. El Nino hasn't really helped that much, huh? Yeah, we might even be a bit below average, but it's not been a real bountiful year that we were expecting, you know. But, you know, again, you know, as long as they get it in Northern Cal, we can steal it, you know.
Yeah, all I know is better than last year.
Yeah.
Remember, no water wars.
No, well, you know, we can have a pseudo water war, huh? A war of water war words of words, maybe.
I just got an interesting and perhaps inspiring note in from Mike, one of our many Mikes. Right now, 2 mile long lines in Seattle to get into Safeco Field for Bernie, and that's with just 2 days notice. Hillary could
with Safeco Field.
Safeco Field.
That'll be a lot of people.
And
they
Mike
started lining up at 2 a.m.
Mike continues. I'm sorry. Mike continues and says Hillary couldn't fill Rainier Beach High School the other night, even though there was over a week's notice for that. Bernie is not a candidate that should quit. Feel the burn. Washington is going for an 85%. 85% win. Mike in Cascadia.
Wow.
And I'm sorry, Jules, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Is this a second one that they're doing today, I take it? Because I thought there was one earlier today that they did.
This email came in 2 minutes ago.
Okay.
There was a huge rally in Portland, Oregon today.
Okay, they were lining up.
And then they had a bird land on his podium, too.
Yeah, they were actually starting to line up at 2 o'clock this morning for the to get into the building, to get into the venue for this.
I had no idea that among Bernie's many skills, he was also a bird whisperer. You know, that's impressive.
No, that's just a little note from Mother Nature saying she approves.
There you go.
I forget what. I saw it on Breaking News an hour or two ago.
Hmm.
But he said something. There'll be a video on it with the bird sitting on the podium. You know, it's like a canary or something.
A canary?
It's a yellow finch.
Okay.
Hi, folks.
Hi, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
I just came in to say hi. I've been on for a while. So I just wanted to say how everybody was doing and stuff. I hope everybody.
How's the weather in Berkeley?
It's warm. It's sunny. Very, very nice.
Yeah, it's 75 here.
Yeah, I may go out in a little while just to take a little walk around, or in my case, roll around. So, you know, I just hope everybody's doing fine. That's all.
Nothing to complain about.
Okay.
Yeah, we are, Larry. You can listen to the podcast. I gave a...
Yeah.
It was a great show.
You went to see Bruce Springsteen, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, at the sports arena. His very last show at the sports arena.
Well, what are they doing? Are they going to tear it down, or are they just...
Yeah, they're tearing it down. USC got its hands on it. And they had a 99-year lease, and you know, due to mismanagement by the Coliseum Commission, they got their hands on both the Coliseum and the sports arena. They had an option to tear down the sports arena, so they might do that, and then probably make some nice, you know, condominiums and or shopping malls, you know, and gentrify it even further, you know, is my guess.
Yeah.
So that's probably what'll happen.
That's good.
Yeah, well, for them, for the billionaires it is, I guess, and the millionaires.
I guess.
Yeah.
You know. Well, you know,
today.
Hi, Timmy.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sparky.
Yeah, can I bring up something? I said I'd bring it up. It's about some of it. I forget who it was in the Horn Facebook page. Wanted to know if there was a food porn cookbook.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember years back when we had the other website.
Yeah, a million years ago there was, yeah.
Yeah, it was on the website, but we lost that.
Right.
So I just wanted to bring that up in case anybody was out there listening and wanted to help put it together. I know Lottie had a lot of good recipes.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things we could start doing is sort of cataloging the food porn. Like when we have a food porn moment, when somebody brings up something, you know, delightful that they do or cook or tasted or tried or something, if somebody out there wants to write that down, we could incorporate that into a growing body of horn food porn. Food porn horn.
Food porn horn.
Yeah, I'd love to have a cookbook from Lottie.
Horn porn.
That would be really wonderful. He's told us about so many wonderful recipes during the last 5 years that I've been on the Horn, you know, Horn Malloy chat. That I don't have them, you know, I don't have them. It would be nice to get them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he had them all on that forum years ago, and that's when they disappeared with the new website.
By the way, Bob, after the show with Angry sent me a really nice note saying that he hoped that I was well. I really appreciated it. So if Angry's listening, thank you very much.
Yeah, he tends to send people on the Skype messages once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Angry's good people.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll just keep on working away. I'm waiting for the June election when I can vote for Bernie. I'm just, you know, biding my time.
The whole California contingent is, Larry.
Yeah, I know. I know. Is that Grant?
Oh, sorry. Is it Grant there? No, I don't see Grant. I think I was going to say something. I guess there was a recent poll in California. Hillary's ahead of Bernie 48% to 41%. So, but there's still time. And, you know, Bernie needs to win California something like 60-40 for the delegate math to work, I think, you know?
Well, you know, I just think that it's important for us to vote for Bernie just to keep his message going, whether or not he wins I don't want to be dissuaded from casting my vote for Bernie.
Well, let me give an update. When I was down in San Jose at the California State Convention, and these are Democratic activists, about 2,500 of us, there were a lot more people wearing Bernie buttons than there were wearing Hillary buttons, I'll tell you that.
Not just the Progressive Caucus?
No, not at all.
Well, see, one of the nice things about a huge, huge delegate-rich state like California is that you've got time to overcome the presumption that Hillary is going to win in communities of color. You know, that chance never existed in any of the Confederate states.
which is why the Confederate states get front-loaded the way they do.
And plus, I think the minorities in California are more diverse, let's just say, than, let's say, in the Deep South, which is mostly African Americans. That's your predominant minority. In California, you have, you know, African Americans, you've got Asian Americans, you've got lots of Latino folks. I mean, you got people from all over the world who settle in California. You know, so I think, you know, it's not nearly as monolithic as it is like in the Deep South, where the preachers tell their, you know, parishioners to go vote for, you know, Hillary, you know, the black churches.
Not supposed to, but
they do anyway. Who's gonna enforce it, you know?
I think that Roger can concur with me after years of being involved with Democratic Party politics, that every time that we've tried to get anything progressive chosen by the powers that be, even in a liberal Democratic state or in the most liberal Democratic Party in the country, it's been like pulling teeth. We've had to fight all kinds of inertia, and I think Roger would concur with me that that's the case.
I would agree. I mean, to get anything progressive through the state convention is like pulling teeth out of the chicken. But all I want to say is that the buttons that were around and the way people were talking and all the rest of that, the vast majority of the delegates were pro-Bernie, not pro-Hillary.
Has everybody seen the interview with Cenk Uygur and Bernie?
I haven't yet.
Oh, it's so good.
I was listening to this.
It's like 30, half an hour, a little over half an hour. But, I mean, it was just, Bernie felt so open talking to him. I mean, in that one thing he said about when it all comes down to the convention, what are you going to do with the delegates? And he goes, well, what are they going to do for us? Something like that.
Yeah. There.
Did you hear about that weird decision from the UC Regents that they're going to discourage and outlaw any or discourage as much as they can any anti-Semitic comments, but that doesn't extend to anti-Zionist groups. In other words, you know,
what they wanted to do was make BDS an anti-Semitic term.
Yeah.
For anti-Zionists, it's anti-Semitic.
Very strange, because Arabs are Semitics and Ethiopians are Semitics.
And Iranians and Iraqis. And,
that's right.
Yeah, we know that.
So that came down.
But
this
says Israel and they're anti-Semitic.
Totally off topic, but I just pulled up the video of the bird on Bernie's podium, and that little bird sat there for almost 30 seconds.
That's pretty extraordinary, isn't it?
It was pretty extraordinary.
Let me shoot the bird away.
Does anybody? We're going deep in the weeds now, but does anybody know what species it is?
It's a golden finch, from what I understand.
Hmm. Yeah. Where was he giving the speech? Up in Washington State?
Portland.
Okay. Well,
I'm not a real bird watcher, but I think golden finch sounds right.
Yeah, goldfinch is, you know, we get them sometimes around Southern Cal. You don't see them a lot, though. They're, I think, more prevalent in your colder climate areas. You know, I used to see a lot of them in Iowa when I lived there.
We get all kinds of them here.
Yeah, well, further north, I think.
They come back in the summer. They'll be back. We feed the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And the finches will be in, and then the goldfinches just move in with the regular finches, the little ones with the red breasts.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they stay here during the summer, and then they leave, and the sparrows are here right now, but they're getting ready to leave. I got some robins. The only birds that never leave here are the doves that we got.
Right.
Yeah, robin. Do you think your robins migrate?
Yeah.
Robins don't. I don't believe.
They generally
they
don't.
They disappear for. I mean, you don't see them.
Yeah, they do.
And then they come back.
They do disappear, but that means that they have gone to. They haven't migrated away. They've gone to different locales and kind of gone to ground. Because their diet changes. Their diet changes during cold weather.
We have sparrows year round. I used to see jays, but not a whole lot anymore. We see seagulls occasionally.
You tend to see the seagulls when you're inland after a major storm, and the winds have been kicking up, and I think they get blown a little further inland than they'd like to be, and then they have to go back out to the sea eventually. But we see them I'm probably 25 miles inland.
We got
a permanent crop of seagulls up in Redding at the Sacramento River.
Got pigeons.
They never freaking leave.
Hmm. We have some wild parrots that populate the Crescent Valley and San Gabriel Valley.
They hang out at the Arboretum.
Yeah, they're characters, you know.
Yeah, we got a lot of parrots. Brazilian ones, too.
Yeah.
Bob, what's happening with the AIC Act?
Things are fairly quiet right now, Larry. This Congress isn't going to do anything. So we're trying to gear up to make sure that the bill gets reintroduced in the new Congress. And you know, if there's any kind of merciful deity out there, we'll get rid of these miserable bastards and be able to move it forward.
No, they're worth kidding.
Yeah. Isn't the Congress and the Senate just basically going through the motions right now?
Oh, I don't even think they're doing that, Sparky. I mean, they're done. Nothing can be accomplished. I mean, I've got a story here that I didn't get to earlier this evening. Bless his little heart. My senator, Joe Manchin, held himself a town hall meeting in Charleston to let voters express their opinion on whatever in the world he should do about the nomination of Merrick Garland. And this is charming. By way of trying to influence him, I'm just reading from the text here. About 60 people attended the town hall, including gun rights advocates dressed in black. So a bunch of gun goobers show up dressed as terrorists to kind of, convey the notion. Nice Senate seat you got there, Joe. Be a shame if something happened to it. No shame to these bastards.
Is he up for re-election this year?
No. No. But he said he brought up a blown-up poster of Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, and he said, well, it says the president shall appoint justices to the court with the advice and consent of the Senate. Constitution's pretty clear, Manchin said. That's his job, and that's our job. Now, he's not saying that he'd vote for Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland would have to
Kiss and Smolik and LARP around on a lump of coal to get Joe to do that. But he does say that he thinks he should get a hearing. And see, now this is one of those art of word-knowing things. The word shall in that string there in Article 2, Section 2, and you can tell me if you disagree, Rick, the word shall applies both to the president. It says the president shall nominate, and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint. So shall applies not only to nominate, but to advise and consent. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's mandatory. There's no discretion to refuse to do that on the part of Congress.
Do we call that in other contexts? What do we call that? Precatory language?
Yeah, like the Second Amendment. The first part of the Second Amendment is precatory language, according to Fat Tony.
Oh, and a little bit of happiness coming through here from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. Under the subject line, Symbology of the Finch, Diane says, the symbolic meaning of the finch is bright energy and good days ahead. Well, I mean, we're close.
Say that again, Bob.
The symbolic meaning of the finch is bright energy and good days ahead.
Thank you.
And, well, you know, it's coming up on Easter, and, you know, Bernie's Jewish, and there is that passage in the New Testament where after Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, gets himself baptized by Cousin John, a dove descends to Jesus. And then a big booming voice says, behold, this is my son, in whom I am well pleased. And seeing as how that probably didn't happen, but the bird part may have, I'll take any sign I can get. And I admit, I think it would be kind of funny if there was like a comedy skit that shows the bird landing there in front of Bernie and somebody in Hillary's campaign going, fuck! Not the bird.
Or you could have a bird landing on Hillary's head and taking a crap on it and then
No, that's Hillary bashing. We're not going to have any Hillary bashing here. I've been fighting that battle for a month now.
We're
not going to have any birds crapping on Hillary's head. Now,
I was just
on the other hand, I think it would be perfectly hilarious if a bird hatched and sort of flew out of Trump's hair.
Right.
That would be an interesting one right there. Take
a shot. That would take the cake.
It would, of course, be a buzzard.
Oh, I've always been a buzzard.
Or a turkey vulture.
Which is a buzzard.
Jeez, those are huge birds. How is it going to hide underneath that hair?
Well, it's got a lot of hair.
Oh, it's a baby, Sparky.
Technical.
It's a little baby buzzard. Just a little baby buzzard. Oh, and by the way, anybody who wants, there's no way I can share out this URL because I can't even pronounce it. But there is a live YouTube feed starting at 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern of the Safeco Field Bernie Rally. And, of course, there will be tens of thousands of people there. And while we can't sit here and say definitively the names of everybody who will be there, we can say definitively who won't be there, can't we? Come on, anybody. Who won't be at Safeco Field tonight?
George Clooney.
Try again.
Hillary.
Try again. MSNBC, CNN, CBS, ABC, Fox, Fox Business, the for-profit media.
What about
be there.
RT. Well, you know, Bernie 2016 TV might be there.
Oh, I'm sure they are, Larry.
Yeah, but see, they're not real. They're not the kind of media that people who get their media from television watch, Larry?
Just to kind of interrupt here, one thing that, you know, talking about the mainstream corporate media, the local media, like on Arizona, they were there finally in the evening to start tagging on these lines, but it took them a long fucking time to get there to even doing this. And I mean, people had been reporting all day that they had had all these lines and stuff, and no one was responding, you know? So it's like no one, I mean, and we have this rally where there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people, there's going to be thousands of people there. And it's just, it's so annoying that people are not paying attention and listening. And that we're not, how do we get a hold of these fuckers? I'm just thrown out there. I mean, how do we drag these people in and try to get some attention paid to this?
You can try to shame them, but see, Jules, the problem here is that they have already bought into a narrative that this is all meaningless, Hillary's going to be the nominee, and this is just window dressing, and it doesn't really matter.
And see, well, that's the problem right there, is meaninglessness. The people, going back to Arizona again, the people in line, they were making those people in line feel like it was meaningless to them. People were leaving.
Oh, sure. You know? And you know the other side of it. Like I mentioned the other night, the Hilarian who said, well, all of those people standing in line were independents who were just too stupid to know they couldn't vote in a closed Democratic primary.
And that made me mad because I was on Skype for probably, well, from about 10 o'clock until my time, until 5 o'clock my time. I'm on your time, Bob. And literally talking to people in line, putting out messages, trying to get people water, trying to get people food. You know, just anything, trying to get people phone numbers to call that they could, you know, get information on, because these, they didn't know what was going on. You know, they're being told by the media, mainstream corporate media, oh, it's over. You know, you can, they felt like they were being told, just leave. And that, you know, there were a group of us that were out there saying, no, no, stay, stay. And we stayed with them. You know, there, I was checking on people until 5 o'clock, making sure they got home okay. Some of the last filters.
That's pretty heroic, Jules. Thank you for doing that.
No, I mean, it wasn't. It was just, that was what needed to be done. And, I mean, we need to, that's what we need to be doing when we have these, start seeing these freaking lines form. It's just jumping on Twitter, jumping on social media, and start reaching out to people and saying, hey, what can we do?
What do you think Bernie's going to do about Arizona? If he's going to do anything at all.
Apparently he's contemplating a lawsuit. No, I'm sorry. I'm misspeaking. I got a link from Angry earlier today. He's beginning to contemplate a lawsuit against the DNC. But not over Arizona, over the whole shutting down access flap.
I see. Okay.
Oh, hey, Bob.
Yes, Sparky.
You ever heard of a guy named Dakota Nelson?
Offhand, no.
Oh. He's a guy that said he's from West Virginia, and he's doing a cheerleader thing at Safeco Field for the crowd.
Oh, cool.
He's firing up the crowd.
Good for him. Good for him.
I just now, saw
I'm hoping Bernie will come here, and when we get wind of it, I'm hoping to get Bernie on the program, because undoubtedly, I'm sure he'll do a call in with, you know, West Virginia's number one right wing broadcaster, Hoppy Kirchival, but he needs to do a conversation with West Virginia's only progressive broadcaster, to wit, yours truly.
Yes. What is Bob? What is our people saying about Tom Hartman? In the chat room, that Tom Hartman is becoming, he's changing, or he's not having Bernie on, or he's dissuading people from voting for Bernie, or what's going on
with Tom Hartman? He's not dissuading people. He's just trying to take middle ground. He's trying to be fair to both sides, and it's not playing out very well for him.
He's got a ban on callers saying anything but happy things about Hillary. Apparently, you can't talk about her mistakes or lapses of judgment or horrible policy positions. You can only say happy things about Hillary.
Okay.
Hey, it's time to get out of here. And just a general reminder, we had a challenge on the table this evening that was kindly met by Laborman and by Cindy. Thank you very kindly. It would be great if we could get a leg up and get a head start on next week. So anybody who wants to help, please feel free to do so. We've had additional expenses this month that have been kind of a booger. And so every little bit helps. And let me encourage anyone who wants to join in, for instance, with Rico, who became a new subscriber just earlier today. That's a huge help, and we're still trying to get to 100 subscribers, and we're still nowhere near it. But it is very, very helpful, and it's much appreciated. And it's the only thing that keeps all of this going. I will thank you all for your participation this evening. I love our Friday on the Front Porch conversations. Who knows, by the time Moran Monday rolls around, we may have found out who it was that Ted Cruz abandoned his traditional family values Christian marriage to romp with. Who knows? But again, it may not even matter. And remember, until he files the lawsuit, well, he can complain all he wants to, but truth is an absolute defense. So there you go. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time participating however you do so in this conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And remember, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group conversation continues after the Malloy program ends at about 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Pacific. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.